Welcome to the official podcast of The Next CMO, hosted by Plana, makers of the first AI-driven marketing leadership platform for quickly and easily creating winning marketing plans, maximizing budget impact, and improving ROI. The Next CMO is a thought leadership podcast for those that are CMOs or want to become one. My name is Kelsey Kraft, and I'm the Senior Marketing Manager.
And I'm Peter Mahoney. I'm the founder and CEO of Plana, and welcome to the Next CMO podcast.
For this week, we have Ken Rapp, the founder and CEO of Bluestream, as our guest. Ken is a dynamic entrepreneur leader, and his expertise includes launching products, building scalable business models, and creating culture that enables employees to thrive. Thanks for coming on, Ken.
Tell us a little bit about your background, what brought you here, and tell us a little bit about Bluestream.
So I play some acoustic guitar, and they were the founder, I'm a co-founder with Bob, and there's a couple of other guys. They were working on the problem that an acoustic guitar cracked right about now, as the weather in New England here gets drier and colder. And why didn't that guitar tell the owner that it was in distress? Like other things in our lives, that your car tells you it needs an oil change, or your heating system changes. So it was a really intriguing situation. And I actually think we're on to, from that early amber of the flame that we'll talk about here today, that the next unmet need is that after a sale, when a product goes home with its owner, it's left to the owner to know what to do and when and how. And that's really what Bluestream is all about. And I'm excited to talk about that with you guys today.
Well, that's great. And certainly the area of a lot of people are in the mode of selling a product and then forgetting it and going on from there. And I think because of the evolution and the acceleration of SaaS-based business models, as an example, I think more and more people are aware of the importance of having a strong ongoing engagement with your customer to understand what they're doing, to help them, to support them. But not everyone is, obviously. And I think a lot of people are still behind the times when it comes to that. So set up the problem for us and help me understand, do you have any good examples of what happens when companies really mess this up? If they have a product and have no way of communicating back to the customer, what happens?
So it's really a great question. As we think about the landscape, there's three examples that I think are marvelous on what has been solved that leaves the unmet need available to be solved. One is, if we're looking to add more suspects and the great unwashed into our sales funnel, there's some dynamite marketing automation systems that allow us to do that. And then when we have those suspects in the top of the funnel, there's some dynamite, and we've used them. All of us have used them, systems that will take your customer through the buyer's journey through the funnel. And then when they come out the bottom of the funnel, we all say, woohoo, we got our order, we got a sale, especially as we're closing out a year. But then those customers go into the wild with the products that they bought. And what is, again, a fantastic area that's automated and set of systems would be, the customer has a problem and they call in, and there are great systems that manage problems if there's a problem with the product. So you never drop a problem again. And like I said, I'm old enough to remember having to talk to our receptionist so that he could tell us, here's the piece of paper and the phone number you need to call. Whereas today it's all automated and it's, those are great. But what really, there isn't a simple and affordable off the shelf platform analogous to those platforms that would allow the product and owner relationship to be communicating back to the brand in a simple way. So the brand and the company that made the product can make the right recommendation throughout what we call a product's life cycle, after sale life cycle of the product. So I think it's an unmet need. So I can't tell you one bad example. I just think it's a generic unmet need.
Yeah, it can definitely get that. And I think we all have, as consumers, have experienced a let down after you purchased a product and maybe it didn't behave the way that it should. You're a little bit surprised about the customer experience, but there's probably an opportunity there too, I suspect. So one is obviously if there's a problem, you want to discover that problem. But the other side of that, of course, is the opportunity to understand how customers are using products more effectively and then find their own unmet needs. What other things are they trying to do that you might learn from their usage and their behavior to figure out, well, maybe there's something else that they can buy from me to get more out of it. Is that sort of part of the way people should be thinking about this, Ken?
Yes. So we define the after-sale product lifecycle into four stages. First stage is unboxing. You get your product and you get it home and you unbox it and you look at it and it hopefully is what you expected and there's some do's and don'ts. And then the next stage though quickly becomes what we call onboarding. So this is where your skill as an owner is typically going up and there may be a break-in period for the product itself. And that could be 1 hour of onboarding or it could be 1 month of onboarding, depending on the product, or even a season of onboarding. And then you move to third stage, which we call just usage. It's usage and enjoyment. And that's when the product is being used. And typically there's things to learn and there's things to increase the owner's expertise and even do some things that are interesting that you might not have known about with the product. And then finally, the fourth stage would be maintenance and care. And that's, as I think about some examples, there can be a one-page document on care, or there could be a 200-page owner's manual like I have in my car, which I opened the first day when I got it, but I certainly haven't gone back to it to know what I should be doing throughout the life of me owning that car. So when we look at the world through the lens of after-sale product engagement and after-sale product lifecycle, what we do is think about customer experience touch points that could be extracted from those four stages of ownership of a product. And having a platform that makes it very simple to marry a triggered event to an action. And we can use any kind of event from an inquiry to a consumer about how it's going, taking pictures, could be sensors, could be the weather, could be time-based, and letting our brand partners set up triggers and actions that then get saved and run in a cloud to make personalized recommendations around education, alerts, and purchase recommendations. So you mentioned purchase recommendations. Absolutely, there are appropriate times when a consumable might be appropriate or oil for your chain if you've ridden your bicycle 20 hours and a platform like this would know at 15 hours, it's being ridden once a week for an hour. So we got 5 more weeks to go. And so we're not going to actually hit them with a coupon, hit our owner with a coupon campaign. We're going to wait until we're 2 hours worth of bike riding away from when the oil would be appropriate and offer an educational link. Would you like to see how you would properly take care of that chain? And then 1 week ahead, which is the next hourly session, would you like a one-click purchase right back to the bicycle manufacturer or that brand to get the right oil for that bicycle? So what we've done is we've said this area, this unmet need where a consumer or an owner buys something, takes it home, and then they unbox it, they onboard and learn about it, they then start using it, and there's some maintenance and care. We work with our customers to say, what are the touch points there that we could create awesome engagement and customer experiences? And we all know that the end result of better customer experiences is not only CSAT and customer joy, but it's revenue. There's revenue, there's profit, there's an economic impact on the business.
How much effort should you spend as a company acquiring customers versus maintaining and expanding the existing ones? I think people have a difficult time finding that balance. We have teams dedicated to it, but how much time should you allocate?
So to go get new customers is 5 to 10 times more expensive than retaining the customers you have. And so I don't know how to put that into time specifically, but when I think about that problem that you're asking about, it's a great question because the actual reselling and remarketing to the same customer is the general practice today, because our companies don't have a connection to their customer. So all they can do is execute on programs that are reselling and remarketing amongst all of the other non-customers, which is much more expensive than if you had a customer connected and bringing value that you could ultimately give the right recommendation at the right time and get very high conversion rates. We see over 40% conversion rates on our recommendations, which is a little bit outrageous, but it's really not, because when my car tells me to change the oil, 100% of the time, I change the oil. But when I get a coupon in the mail from my favorite car service provider that says you can have a 10% off changing the oil, I delete. That's, again, they're marketing to me as if I'm just a general person, rather than when the car tells me to change the oil. Now, what the car doesn't do today is it doesn't then schedule the appointment, connect me to my service provider, have my credit card so I don't have to wait in line when I get there, and manage me through the remediation or the solution to the problem. What it does is it's focused on alerts rather than the education and purchase recommendations and remediation, which we think is great, because the alerts does a lot for an owner like me. But I actually have a great example. So the thing that I'll share with you guys and your listeners, that I became a grandfather a year ago, first time. And that's an awesome thing. So I highly recommend it to people. But what was cool is my daughter-in-law, when she first got pregnant, she said, hey, you should download the Baby Center app and just plug in my grandson's due date. And I did that. And when I'm old enough to know when my wife and I had our two boys, we had a book called What to Expect When You're Expecting. And that was our Bible as we went through the pregnancy and after the pregnancy. This app gave me every few days an alert about the product, which is the baby, and the owner, which was the mom, what to do about the baby's growing fingernails. And so you probably should eat some more spinach. And would you like to watch a video on exercising the right way to help your baby, et cetera, et cetera. Fantastic. Then further, as she got further into the pregnancy, it even told us with one-touch purchasing, click here if you want to get some formula, because you're now 7 months into the pregnancy and your baby is coming up on, you're going to need some things in the house before the baby's born. It had click back to talk directly to their advisors about any questions about the pregnancy. So it did alerts, education, and purchase remediation, quote unquote, recommendations. I just think that's a fantastic model. The problem is it's expensive to do that if you're a product company that makes a product and you don't have a software team. And so it's expensive. It's actually complex, because as our mobile devices or laptops or email and text came along, as the technology platforms evolve, you'd need to keep maintaining and supporting whatever you developed. And so it's not just develop the product, it's develop it, it's maintain it, it's support it. Whereas if you're using a sales management platform out there, they do all those updates for you and you just use the platform. And that was really what struck us as the unmet need. We could be very helpful to lots of companies that make products but don't have that connection, ongoing relationship with their customers.
Yeah, it's interesting, because you can imagine that. I think a lot of people intellectually get the fact that they need to engage with their customers after they purchase, but don't know how to make it a reality. And what you guys have done is actually put the tools in place, and I assume can provide them with the advice and counsel, at least at some level, to say these are the kinds of things you should do to nudge them in the right direction. Now, it's interesting, because the example you brought up around going through a pregnancy is something that brings up some important factors that you need to think about when you're engaging with consumers and using consumer data, is the balance between alerting and utility and usefulness and data privacy. So how should people think about that relationship with their customers' data?
Yeah, that's so important. So philosophically, we just believe give all the control to the consumer. They should be able to stop anything they want to stop and opt out. And in fact, our execution is that the data, all the data, is owned by the consumer, period, End of story. They own the data. The company brand who's going to be getting the data directly, and then that's the round trip. It goes product to brand or company, and then recommendation out to the consumer, and then feedback to the brand. So it's product, brand, consumer, back to the brand. They're what's called the controller of the data. So they're the ones who can decide what properties are the right properties. What are the right recommendations? And what's really cool is most companies have a lot of content and knowledge already. It might even be on their website sitting there. It could be like a friend of mine got a keyboard the other day that he bought for a family member for Christmas. And I can't say his name because then the family member might know that they're going to get a keyboard, a little keyboard. And it came with a whole plethora of knowledge and educational materials and information, but he's not ready for it. And so what's awesome is the data is controlled by the brand so they can put the right information at the right time. And then Bluestream's job is the third leg of the stool, and we're the processors of the data. So our job is to process that data, create personalized experiences from how the consumers react to the recommendations, give that data back to our brand partners so that they know who's using the products, when they're using them, why they use them, how they use them, what they don't like, what they do. And then really that feeds into the whole product strategy side of the equation. But data security, data control is so important. And just at its fundamentals, the consumer or owner of the product owns the data.
That's a great philosophy. And certainly it's something that's being mandated in some parts of the world right now, that it is. So it's good that you guys are on the right side of that, especially as the GDPR legislation evolves and hardens. And we're starting to see more, like in California, people starting to push more consumer friendly data protection. So clearly and rightfully, it's going in that direction. So it's good that you guys are philosophically aligned with that. So the other thing that, of course, this does, especially if you're a brand making a product, in many cases, in fact, some of the cases you brought up, from your car to some baby thing to something else, you're often selling your product through a distribution channel. And in doing that, historically, brands have really lost a connection and lost visibility into what's going on with the consumer. So this presents them all of a sudden with a plethora of data that they can use responsibly, of course, to understand what the consumer is, what their experience is. The big question is, do people know what to do with it? Do people even know? So if you say, if a customer who, a brand who's making a product says, I want to create a better post-purchase engagement process. In general, do people know how to do that? They just don't have the tools? Or do they actually need to understand the kinds of, independent of the tools, the kind of approaches they should take to create and engage with their consumers better? And the parallel I'll make is around things like website personalization. So everyone in the world knows that personalization on your website is a good thing. The problem is that many marketers don't really have the tools to create segmented and personalized messages. So they can have all the technology in the world, but they don't know how to do it. So do the brand managers understand this kind of consumer engagement, these techniques that they need to think about as you design a post-purchase experience with their customer?
Yeah. So because it's a white space, unmet need, we're very happy to work with brands and walk through the process that we've learned about in our evolution as a company and what other customers are doing. And what's cool is our brand customers are very open to sharing how do you improve customer experiences. That's why I love being in the work that we do, all of us, is we really care about customers. We do want them to have a great experience. And we're learning together. So I don't think we're near the point yet where everybody knows exactly what to do. You're right, Peter. We have to look. And the context that I described earlier is so important that that's our fundamental framework, is the life cycle of the product. And the good news is there's an awful lot of knowledge around care and maintenance of a product that most brands have. They are the experts. They have the knowledge. So there's a lot of touch points right in there that are available to us. don't let the humidity get too dry and crack my guitar. So how should we solve that problem? And then we work together on, do we monitor weather? Do we put sensors in guitars? Do we ask customers questions? Those are all reasonable solutions. But it's on the unboxing, onboarding, and then the general usage of the product where we're going to learn a lot. We're going to learn a lot over the next decade about how products are used in the wild because we don't know. And I think that's going to be just a marvelous next step for all companies, all producers of products. But you made another comment I'd like to go back to, and that is, given the world today, the traditional distribution channels are very different than they were a year ago. And most people don't want to just go to a store and hang out. I'm not saying you don't love to shop, but they don't want to go to a store and hang out and try stuff. And so the whole e-commerce revolution has been accelerated in our view, what we see as a result of the pandemic and what's going on. And I had a conversation this morning with an investor who we were talking with about that step one to have e-commerce, but it still doesn't get you the engagement. And so the, if you're going to invest in an e-commerce program, it's pretty good timing to be learning about and thinking about after-sale customer engagement. And a company like Bluestream, we're passionate about it. We're passionate. All of us really believe that there's a place to help the world with after-sale engagement, and are happy to share our tools. We have financial models that we'll share with companies that they can plug in their numbers and plug in churn rates today and look at models if you reduce churn and retain customers. You can put in your current revenues and say, what's the gross margin there? And if I add to the connection points, not only with the retail distributions, but if I add this channel, do I increase my gross profits and things? So we have some financials we can help them with, as well as this customer experience process of learning from a customer who I, for one, don't read a lot when I'm sent an email with a lengthy, I have too many emails a day, but I'll stop and watch a 30-second video anytime. It's 30 seconds. I can do it while I'm doing other things. So learning that about Ken is real important because then that's the way I want to be have the content curated for me personally. And that's the kind of thing I think we're going to learn a lot about as we go forward into this after-sale customer product usage and engagement.
So I'd assume that there are at least a couple of different segments of product producers. There are people who are deeply connected where you have an IoT kind of strategy and you've got a smart device that's got sensors and it's feeding things back in real time to the mothership, et cetera. So your car these days is a giant bundle of sensors that's connected into the net as an example. But then there are companies that aren't. So there are companies that are making a simple physical product. And in that case, I assume you need a different strategy to engage the consumer. As an example, you're going to need an email, as you said. You're going to need some method, whether it's an app that's an accompaniment to the product or an email experience that is part of the overall solution to the customer. And then I assume you need some kind of incentive for them. You need to communicate the value for them to provide that information and get updated at certain times. So if it's you need to buy formula now, or you need to change your oil, or you need a new bike chain, you need some way you need to do that. Is that something, that core understanding? I assume that's something that is probably new for people, figuring out how to create those post-sales engagement models and incentives so that people actually engage with you.
Yeah, great point. Is that there? We found three components that are pretty important that we've had to build skills and expertise on to partner with brand product manufacturers and leading brands. And if I work backwards, it's from the cloud and what are we call them product journeys in the life cycle after the sale. So the unboxing, onboarding, using and caring or maintaining. You can set up that data that you want to trigger an action and store it away. And we call those journeys. So you'd build your product journey templates and store those away, and then they run up in our cloud. The next layer getting closer to the consumer is mobile apps. And not everybody has that skill or has that expertise. And so we've had the ability and built our competence on providing white labeled mobile apps for our brand partners. They're able to use their colors, their logos, and their properties for their products. And then getting closer to the product itself, in some cases, it's simply, for example, in the pet industry, this is a better food that we want to provide to our customer. And it may be simply answering questions about how's the puppy looking today? How's the coat look after a week of eating the food? Would you step on the scale and hold your puppy or get your dog on the scale and just enter in the weight? Or it can be as important to have source data as real sensors that are part of, like you said, the car, or to read the motion on a puppy and then have that transmitted up to the cloud so that you can use that as source data to trigger an action. And so Bluestream has built the expertise on all three of those layers in the cloud to enable journeys to be run with mobile apps that are available. Either if a customer has a mobile app, we can provide them with the links up to the journeys and to the source data. And then down at source data, the IoT, you mentioned IoT. It's interesting in IoT, there's 30 billion IoT sensors in the world today, and a fraction of those are being used beyond alerts. So their fundamental purpose was to alert you to something going on with that product or with that environment. But then the data isn't used in context to then make a recommendation back to help a customer or owner do something with that data. And I think that's part of the evolution of IoT, is now that we've cracked that one, IoT devices are pretty commercially off the shelf. You can buy sensors pretty inexpensively these days. Rather than trying to make money on sensors in a product, our approach is let's build the business by using sensors if that's what you need to power product journeys. And then together we'll work with you to grow your revenue and your customer engagement and experience.
And I'd love for you to give us an example of someone that does a company that does a great job managing this post-sale customer experience.
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me give you an example of, I'll stay with the music industry out of great respect for that first problem that we solved. The folks who make cases for acoustical instruments, they are looking at it through the lens of you get home with your instrument, you unbox it, and it's the environment is very important. And so when you unbox it, they can ask some checkpoints there and have some education available. And then as you start to use the product, knowing every time the case opens and closes. So in that case, we did some IoT work and the team knows if the case is opened or closed. So you likely are playing the instrument, whatever it is in there. And it also has temperature and humidity available as source data. And it's a great example of a monitoring of the environment combined with education and usage. And for example, I happen to be a guitarist and I'm a born again after my kids grew up, like back in a rock band, and we're not out playing now, but we love playing. And I changed my strings quite a bit. And so knowing how often I'm playing, connecting that into 5 hours of crazy Ken playing real hard with lots of sweat on his hands to the strings, he ought to replace the strings. That's a touch point that we can walk through. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's an example using a musical instrument as an example. Without the IoT, I talked about food and asking questions of a consumer. And then I just happen to love my grandson, so I'll stick with my baby center. It's such a great way to see what I'm talking about here in terms of a very comprehensive solution.
That's great. And I think there are probably fewer great examples than opportunities to improve out there today, which speaks to the unmet need part of what you guys are trying to solve, because I think some of these capabilities are just starting to become available for people. Obviously, the acceleration of digital purchases and connectedness of consumers is something that is leaning into this opportunity. So it makes a ton of sense. So one question, Ken, is who inside an organization do you think should own the post-purchase experience?
In my circles, what we talk about, and when I'm talking with other marketing and salespeople, The CMO really has moved from, and it's always been here, but has a focus has moved to revenue in addition to maybe the assuring the outreach and driving new business and getting prospects into the sales funnel. So I think CMO, this is a perfect audience for who we like starting with, because a chief marketing officer really understands that it's now so important that it's that the outreach and omnichannel investments and digitization is all going to drive revenue for the company. And it's got to do it and make customers super happy and have a great experience. So that's really who I think really starts championing this type of effort.
It's interesting, and of course, not shocking that you're on the Next CMO podcast talking about this, but most CMOs, one of the biggest struggles is finding opportunities for growth. And interestingly, it sounds like it's right under their noses. And if there's an opportunity to find a way to engage those consumers to become more successful, not churn, if it's a recurring model, or buy more, buy related products and services, as an example, which seems to be you've brought up some great examples with the bike chain, the dog food, the baby formula. There are lots of great opportunities if you understand this journey. What most people don't do, they don't have a sophisticated enough understanding of what the consumers do with a product once they get it out into the wild, and they may not have the tools and techniques necessary to actually make this happen. Yeah, it's really fascinating. So I think we're getting to the end of our time here, but just a couple of quick questions. One, how can people learn more about Bluestream and who's the right kind of company to work with Bluestream? Is it a giant brand? Is it a small brand? Anything in between? So tell us a little bit about that.
Great. So as we're wrapping it up, I would offer anyone who would like to reach out to me directly. I'm happy to start with me and we can have a quick 10-minute discussion and test the waters. And we're here to help, and certainly can at Bluestream. No E in Blue, it's Bluestream.
I was going to say, there is an E, there's just one of them, not two.
That's right, it's one E, not two. Thank you for that clarification.
That would be Blustram, just to be clear.
That's true, it would be Blustram. Maybe it should be, sometimes that causes confusion. But anyway, so I'd be happy to speak with anyone and get started. I've been around the block, so my approach is that we're just here to help the industry and happy to share all the resources we have. You can visit our website, which is Bluestream.io, and any of our team would be happy to talk. To the points you're making here, Peter, that this is a kind of a new area to think about the customer engagement, other than we're all on very solid footing with maintenance, but in food and beverage and in some consumable products that can even apply here, there isn't a maintenance, although there might be an environmental factor. You want to keep the food or the beverage in the right place. So it's a blank sheet of paper and we have a framework, and we'd be happy to talk through and share our framework with any of your listeners.
That's fantastic, Ken. And I think just one last more question from Kelsey, and I think we'll wrap from there.
Yes, Ken. Favorite question. What advice would you give to those that are CMOs or aspiring to be one?
Oh boy, that's like, isn't that the question that we're all so lucky to be living? We're lucky to be alive, but we're lucky to be living in a period of unbelievable transformation in the customer experience world. And so I say, keep at it. Make sure you're solving a real problem. That's the fundamental, is make sure your products are really solving the problems for your consumers. And then keep at it. And it's extremely exciting times. And I think that the world will be very different 5 to 10 years from now. The total picture of a customer is changing. And so we're lucky, and I'm excited to be part of it.
Well, that's great, Ken. Great advice. And the other part we talked about right before is that all you're looking for growth, it's right under your nose. You just have to focus on that post-purchase engagement. I think that's it. Great. I think we're wrapping up. So Kelsey, why don't you take us out?
Yes. Thank you so much for your time today, Ken. Great conversation. Love learning about the post-sale experience. Make sure to follow the Next CMO and Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can visit our website or email them to thenextcmo@plana.com. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.